Hey everyone, welcome back to Who's There. I'm your host, Allison. If you're new here, thank you for joining us. This is a podcast where I talk to a new horror fan every week because I hope to destigmatize what it means to be a horror movie fan. Because most of us are just regular people who like the adrenaline rush of being scared for some reason, and here we delve into those reasons. How's everyone's post-Halloween hangovers going? I've been steadily preparing for binging holiday horror movies, both old and new, and that included a new Christmas horror movie called It's a Wonderful Knife. On this week's episode, I got to talk to writer Michael Kennedy and director Tyler McIntyre about what it was like to create It's a Wonderful Knife. We talked about why they love the original It's a Wonderful Life and how it inspired them to write this movie, and they even did their best to try and convince me to check it out. I don't know if I will, maybe. It's a Wonderful Life is only available in theaters this Friday, November 10th, so make sure to check your local listings for showtimes. As always, please take a second to rate and review us wherever you listen to us. And I think that's it. Let's get into my conversation with Michael Kennedy and Tyler McIntyre. Hey, Michael. Hey, Tyler. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I'm good. Thank you so much for being here. I just watched It's a Wonderful Knife earlier today. It was amazing. Can't wait to talk to you about it. But do you want to start by telling everyone a little bit about yourself?
Sure. I'm Michael Kennedy. I'm a screenwriter. I live here in Los Angeles. I wrote the movie Freaky with Chris Landon. I'm happily married to my husband, Brian. I have two dogs. And tomorrow's Halloween, and I can't wait to celebrate.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm Tyler McIntyre. I'm a director based in Los Angeles, but I'm originally from Canada. I'm happily married to my wife, Alana, and we have been doing the horror film festival circuit with the movie and wrapping up to Halloween and by extension, Christmas.
Amazing. So the first thing I always ask all my guests is, what's your favorite scary movie?
Mine is Scream and Scream 2. I can't not put them together because I think they're both perfect.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Mine is Evil Dead 2 because I love horror comedies and there's none that get that balance better.
Awesome. So how did you both first fall in love with the horror genre?
I was scared of the horror genre as a kid. My brother was watching Halloween on like a Saturday afternoon back when people used to watch cable. And he was watching it and it scared the shit out of me. I couldn't watch more than like 5 minutes. So I ran out of the room and then cut to December 1996. And I was going to the movies with a bunch of high school friends and had no idea what I was walking into. And it was Scream and was really mad at them for bringing me to a scary movie. But then within about 5 minutes of the movie starting, I was totally addicted. Like scared out of my mind, but also was loving the feeling I was experiencing. And I actually literally walked out of that movie and said to my friend Kelly, who I'm still friends with to this day, she was in my wedding. I said, I'm going to make one of those one day. It was all born for me. It was obsession with it.
Yeah. And I also got into it kind of through my older brother, who was a couple years older than me, but he was really into like monsters and like Fangoria and stuff like that. And to, you know, when I was like, you know, 5 or 6 or 7, like, you know, those things were really scary to me. It's just like, ooh, you know, and a little bit forbidden. So there was something kind of, you know, something kind of interesting about them visually. And you'd also kind of always see the boxes in like the video store, like those great kind of older covers that they used to have, you know, that are not as big a deal these days, but mm-hmm. You know, there was all these like amazing, you know, horror movie covers, like, you know, like Society and you know, like all these, you know, great. Yeah. Just like they're creepy, often had nothing to do with the movie, but, you know, like really kind of, you know, fun, creepy dolls and stuff, you know, like, or like the Ghoulies, you know, like cool covers. And so I kind of was intrigued by it before I was even like able to watch it. And then once I started kind of like my older brother started renting those movies and I started kind of like, you know, having to kind of sit through them in order to watch like the comedy movie that I rented. And I just got exposed to a lot of horror movies that way. And then I also used to like draw a lot as a kid. And so I started drawing like more and more macabre things. And then like, I remember when I was in the second grade, the teacher was like, hey, you know, here's a note for your dad. You know, he's got to come in for a parent-teacher conference because this stuff you're drawing is getting a little creepy. You know, and he kind of like, you know, was like kind of came in and like they gave this whole spiel about like, hey, you know, there's some dark stuff going on here. Like, is Tyler seeing someone sort of thing? And then eventually my dad like was like, yeah. And he like opened up his briefcase and like pulled out his like work notes. And he had like all these weird doodles that were like all super.
That's funny.
Yeah. And he's like, I don't think it's a problem. And so like was always kind of super supportive of that, you know, side of me.
Oh, that's awesome. So you are here to talk about your new movie that comes out on November 10th in theaters. It's called It's a Wonderful Knife. And this is a horror adaptation of the classic Christmas movie, It's a Wonderful Life, which I have to admit I have not seen, but I get the gist from watching It's a Wonderful Knife of what it's about. And I think I liked It's a Wonderful Knife way better than I would have liked It's a Wonderful Life. Anyways.
Great movie. I think you'll love it, though.
I mean, I watched A Christmas Story for the first time a few years ago, and I was like, so I don't know.
It's a Wonderful Life kicks the shit out of A Christmas Story. Like,
sorry, but It's a Wonderful Life is probably my second favorite Christmas movie.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, maybe I'll give it a try. So It's a Wonderful Knife is so much fun, has a lot of heart and some really great kills that I can't wait for everyone to see. And I want to go see it again in theater for that kill at the party. Yeah. I just want to see that on the big screen. I saw a lot of Easter eggs for a lot of other movies, which is always fun to spot. Can you tell everyone a little bit of what it's about in case they're not familiar with It's a Wonderful Life?
It's a bit of a riff on Charles Dickens' A Christmas Carol. And, you know, similarly, our movie is not really a beat for beat remake of It's a Wonderful Life. It's really more just inspired by that kind of high concept nugget of somebody getting shown a nightmare version of their life and, you know, trying to have fun with it in a sort of Christmas slasher wrapper.
More Winnie Carruthers is our George Bailey. And she, on Christmas Eve, she stops a serial killer in her small town who has killed her best friend, her best friend's grandfather, and her best friend's boyfriend. The killer comes after her and her brother, and she stops the killer by killing the killer. She does what the heroine does in minute 90 of a movie and minute 15 of our movie. And then the movie cuts to a year later, and Winnie's kind of suffering from what went down, losing her best friend. You know, she killed a bad person, but she's still kind of suffering from the idea like she took a life. But the person she killed was this nefarious, money-grubbing, Trumpian nightmare. So the whole town is thrilled. They're happy. They're out from under his thumb. They're vibrant. They got their lives back. So everyone kind of, in a Hallmarky, toxic positivity way, ignores pretty much what happened. And so Winnie kind of feels like she's on an island and no one paying attention to her and no one's accepting the reality of the situation and like, you know, just out of sight, out of mind, including her family. So she, you know, then has the teenage version of the worst Christmas ever. Her boyfriend cheats on her. She doesn't get into the college of her choice. So she ultimately decides that she would be better off if she never existed. And then sure enough, her wish comes true. The killer is back. And now she's like, what the fuck? What do I do? How do I get my life back? How do I stop this asshole? And who is it? So yeah, it's a very modern Gen Z-ish take on an old classic.
Yeah. How did you first come to the idea to adapt It's a Wonderful Life in a horror as a horror movie?
Well, for me, it's not so much an adaptation as it is like kind of a play on it. And I always wanted to do a Christmas horror movie because I love both Christmas movies and horror movies. And I had such a great time writing Freaky, which is a play on Freaky Friday, that when I sat down to kind of brainstorm ideas for how I could do my own version of a Christmas movie, I said, you know what? I really like this wheelhouse. Let's try it again. And immediately thought of It's a Wonderful Life. It was my favorite Christmas movie. It was my dad's favorite Christmas movie. It was the tradition. Every Christmas Eve, the family sat down and watched It's a Wonderful Life. So for me, once I started thinking about what that could look like as a horror movie, I realized like I had a viable premise and a viable movie. And I also got a chance to like, you know, in It's a Wonderful Life, he's only shown what his life would look like without him for about 15 minutes. And it's in the last half hour of the movie. So it was a way to kind of move everything up and make it more urgent and just more fun. And because It's a Wonderful Life is actually pretty dark. So that's kind of how the genesis started.
Yeah. And Tyler, when did you get attached as the director and what drew you to the script?
I was brought on, you know, early, you know, as we were before we brought on the cast, obviously. What drew me to the script is, I mean, I've done some previous work a lot in kind of horror comedies, and I always want to do a Christmas movie. And what I liked about Michael's script was that it kind of has a lot of sincerity to it. Like a lot of the previous movies that I'd written had a bit of a cynical edge to them, you know, like, you know, authentic relationships, but all, like, ultimately were, you know, sort of after something that's a little bit, you know, insincere in a way. So I really was drawn to the fact that this is like a relatively uplifting slasher film, you know, like, and kind of wants to end in this very positive place. And that was an interesting challenge for me. Like, I really thought that would be kind of a, you know, it's part of what's fun about Christmas horror is that you get to juxtapose all of these kind of cheery sort of visual elements with stuff that's really, really dark. And that's the, you know, the fun for me. And there's a lot of the satire kind of already in the script. And I want to kind of push that a little further. And we worked a bit kind of developing the look of things and also like the difference between the two worlds and trying to create more opportunities that way. But a lot of it was already there on the page and we just became about sharpening it up and then figuring out the best way to kind of bring this to life.
You have some pretty amazing people in the cast, like Justin Long and Catherine Isabel from Ginger Snaps. How did the cast come together?
Yeah, the cast was, you know, we got really lucky, very fortunate. A lot of the good people that were very, you know, like high on our lists were available. And we shot it kind of like, you know, just before the strike of the actors and writers earlier this year and kind of, you know, at that sweet spot where they sort of, the fallout of that, you know, of COVID was still going and then the ramping of the strike, you know, right where you want to be. Yeah. And it was, so we had cast Jane Widdup kind of early after I sort of saw her Yellow Jackets and they did a very good reading of Winnie. And that character is a, you know, such a kind of linchpin for how the story works. And they had a very good read about, you know, they really seemed to help the audience buy into the gravity of this sort of, you know, strange world that Winnie was finding herself in. And, you know, we decided to kind of build the young cast like around the energy that Jane brought. And then, you know, like Joel McHale came on pretty early and to play Winnie's father, David. And, you know, he's usually like a bit of a comedy kind of heavyweight. And we knew we were going to kind of use him as a bit more of like a gee whiz kind of Hallmark dad, and then more of a dramatic kind of, you know, turn with him. And, you know, and he's a very capable actor who has a lot of different ways that he, you know, a lot of different tools he doesn't always get to use on every project and really kind of clicked with like the weirdness of it. And so once we kind of had those two, then it became a bit of like finding people to kind of compliment them. And we did a big search for Bernie, who's going to play that. And we ultimately landed on Jess McLeod, who is, you know, Vancouver based performer. And they had a really great chemistry with Jane and the two of them, you know, together. That really became like my favorite part of the movie, is kind of figuring out, you know, the ins and outs of like their relationship. And that had a lot of influence on like where the script had kind of ended up kind of while we were shooting, really. And then Justin Long, you know, we knew we wanted a bit of a bigger choice for the villain. And he has such a great track record in terms of like horror comedies, like, you know, yeah. Barbarian recently, and obviously like Drag Me to Hell and Tusk. And, you know, he sort of had a kind of fun genre assumption about him. But again, we're not really playing him like his nice guy self. Like where he is a bit of a large kind of villain in a way. And we thought that would be a good direction to go with him. And he had a lot of, you know, he's just a fountain of ideas. And so it became more about kind of shaping them and figuring out like what his look looks is and defining the parameters of that, so it fits into our world.
Oh, amazing. So was this filmed like in an actual snowy town somewhere, or was that all put in after?
Yeah, it was filmed in Vancouver. So like there's a little bit of snow because we were in March, we were shot in March. So it was a little bit late, but still cold enough that you could see people's breath and still kind of like, it's still technically winter, but we did have to, like, it snowed a lot in pre-production and we ended up, our special effects department ended up like keeping a lot of that snow and then, you know, shoveling it into frames and stuff like that.
Yeah. So
there's very little, like there's a little bit of smoothing that happened, but not really any digital snow in the movie, which is something we never think looks right. So we were glad to be able to avoid that most part and be able to use actual snow that's cold and there on the day.
We actually had one of our special effects guys too, I think, knew somebody at an ice rink and he would, did you know this, Tyler? He would take his truck every day and go pick up all their shavings because the Zamboni would scrape off ice from the ice rink and they would go and collect those shavings every day.
Yeah. And it works for like different things too. Like depending on what you're doing with it, like if it's like, you can use what they call fish ice, which is like ice that they use to like preserve fish at like a fisherman's wharf. Yeah. And that looks good for certain amount for certain things, because light bounces off it well. And like, there's different types of snow, as we were learning, for different things. It was a bit of a process.
Oh, very cool, Michael. So now that I know that you're a huge Scream fan, is Catherine's character's name Gail Prescott an homage to Scream?
Oh yeah, 100%, not a doubt. Like, I literally couldn't think of a name for some reason, so I just typed that up, and I was like, oh, that rings really nicely. And plus, those are my two favorite final girls. So yeah, it was super fun to get to honor them both.
So the soundtrack for It's a Wonderful Life is awesome too, especially during that kill scene that I mentioned before. How did the soundtrack come together? Did you have any say in that?
Yeah, they usually, you know, when you're editing a movie, you try out different songs, and a lot of that, you never have enough money, but you're always kind of looking for songs that are appropriate. And we worked with our composer, Russ Howard, to do a lot of the kind of main sort of score work. And then he also had some connections to other, you know, like sort of Christmas type stuff that would be in the background, because we need to really populate these sort of different vibes. Like the beginning, the first 15 minutes of the movie has this very cheery Christmas vibe that you're sort of supposed to be into. And then it has this, so it's supposed to seem kind of cute. And then the next 15 minutes, you have to be kind of annoyed by it. And then you have this whole dark kind of Christmas that has we wanted to have a bit more of a Tim Burton-y kind of vibe to it. And the score kind of brought on those sorts of qualities to it. And so we looked at a lot of that sort of stuff. But even like, there's a character named Pete who gets killed in the movie, no spoilers, but who's played by a DJ musical artist named Dimitri Vegas. And there's like this cover that he did for the movie called, it's a cover of Carol the Bells. And that's the song that, so he like composed the song that plays in the scene in which he gets killed. And so it was just a question of kind of reaching out to people and trying to build the soundtrack from the ground up.
Yeah. Michael, why did you decide to use the Aurora Borealis as a catalyst for Winnie having her wish granted?
You know, I actually had written a draft of the script that didn't have that. It was just more of like, it was almost like a magical moment and the wind blew and all this stuff. And I gave it to a friend and he read the script and he just goes, you know, I think there's an opportunity to use the Aurora Borealis with the wish. And I kind of was just like, huh, that's really interesting. What makes you say that? And he goes, well, it feels like a moment. Like right now it just kind of happens and it's supernatural, but like there's no, I don't know. He just felt like it kind of just happened and it didn't have like a thing. It didn't have that thing that you kind of needed for her also to wish herself back into existence too. And so, yeah, he pitched the Aurora. And then when I started studying legends tied to the Aurora Borealis, the legend that they actually talk about in the movie is an actual legend in Alaska about, you know, the people in this, the natives in this Alaskan town always said the Aurora was people who died violently. So when I saw that, I was like, okay, that actually is like a really, his pitch was the Aurora. And I said, well, why does it matter? And then when I started doing research, I found a great lore that I was like, I can actually use this lore in the movie too. So yeah, it was fun.
So Tyler, did you pull inspiration from any other Christmas horror movies while you were figuring out how you're going to direct this?
Yeah. I mean, all sorts of different types of, I definitely grew up kind of liking more of the macabre kind of like Christmas films, like, you know, like the Gremlins and things like that. And I really like A Nightmare Before Christmas and like, you know, Scrooged and you know, like the Richard Donner one. And so, when Michael and I talk a lot about Black Christmas, you know, like, which is like, you know, kind of the OG, like Christmas slasher. And so we, you know, we definitely had some of that stuff going on, but we also looked at, you know, movies that had kind of two sort of worlds and maybe like a magical wish. Like I looked at like Mr. Destiny, which is like this whole like, kind of Jim Belushi movie where he sort of wakes up in this like alternate reality version of his life. And so we didn't get like, there wasn't like one kind of, you know, guiding like North Star for us in that sense. But, you know, it's more of a smattering of different kind of, you know, inspirations. And like, we looked a lot at like things like Back to the Future 2 and stuff that has like kind of alternate realities in it. And it was about kind of, for me, figuring out the two, you know, sides of this world and how to make them, you know, different and interesting.
So two questions. I noticed that when they go to the movie theater, there's a title on the marquee that says, "I Know What You Did Last Christmas." Is that a hint at your next Christmas movie?
It was actually production design that did that.
We had some, we threw around some titles, but yeah, I think it was actually our set decorator, Matt, who came up with that.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes a great movie though.
It's an idea. Yeah. Come on, Michael. That's up to you. So I just have one question left. What are each of your favorite Christmas horror movies?
OG Black Christmas, without a doubt. So great. It's one of my favorite movies ever. Like, just, love it so much.
Very cool.
Yeah, I mean, mine is, I just mentioned it, probably the Richard Donner Scrooge. Just, I think that's, you know, it's a movie that's like, you know, it's more horror than anything else. And I think that's hilarious.
Awesome. Well, thank you both so much for being here. Cool. Everyone go see It's a Wonderful Knife. It's out on November 10th in theaters. Yeah, thank you. Thank you both so much.
Alrighty.
That's it for this week's episode of Who's There. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Michael Kennedy and Tyler McIntyre, and thanks again to Michael and Tyler for coming on. Again, It's a Wonderful Knife is only available in theaters this Friday, November 10th, and you don't want to miss this one. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Who's There PC, and if you have any questions, comments, concerns, horror movie recommendations, or you'd like to be a guest, please shoot us an email at whostherepc@gmail.com. Until next time, stay scary and never ask who's there.